Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, April the 24th, 2009. Has California rained on the corn ethanol parade? Or will the prevailing winds from the west carry good news for the Corn Belt? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Our panelists in studio today are Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of the ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Here's the way the numbers settled in Chicago, including the day and the overnight trade. Composite, high to low, Friday to Friday. On the weekly markets, wheat futures finished like this. The high, 533 and three quarters. The low at $5 and three quarters, with a settlement price at 532 and a quarter in the May, up 9 and a quarter from the previous week. July settled the week at 543 and a quarter. On the weekly charts, that's 8.5 cents higher. May corn futures at 386 and a quarter for the high, the low at 360 and a half, with a settlement price in the May at 377, up three quarters. December futures, the harvest month in the corn pit at 406 and three quarters, finished down a quarter. May soybean futures high this week of $10.64, the low at 1012 and three quarters, and a settlement price down 10 and three quarters at 1040 and a quarter for the May beans. November futures at 933 and a quarter, down 1 and three quarters. May oats at $1.93 and a quarter, up 4 and a quarter. From the livestock side of the CME group, April live cattle, 88.20 for the high, the low at 86.70, with the settlement price down $1.47.5 at $86.85 a hundredweight. April feeders at 99.75 on the week, finished 57.5 higher. And April lean hogs this week, a 71.80 top, a bottom at 68.75, and a settlement price there at $69 even. That was down $3.25.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's open the discussion point today like this. It is about California's energy decisions this week and comes verbatim from farmpolicy.com. Keith Good there does a great job of summarizing and capturing media accounts of ag policy-related events. It'll take a bit to get through this, but I think the understanding that will come might be worth the wait. Margot Roosevelt reported in the Los Angeles Times that California took aim Thursday at the oil industry and its impact on global warming, adopting the world's first regulation to limit greenhouse gas emissions from the fuel that runs cars and trucks. This according, of course, to Keith Good at farmpolicy.com. The Air Resources Board there voted 9-1 in favor of the complex new rule, which is expected to slash the state's gasoline consumption by a quarter in the next decade. It seeks to expand the market for electric and hydrogen-fueled vehicles and jumpstart a host of futuristic biofuels to replace corn-based ethanol as well as oil. The LA Times article stated that the regulation requires producers, refiners, and importers of gasoline and diesel to reduce the carbon footprint of their fuel by 10% over the next decade, and it launches the state on an ambitious path toward ratcheting down its overall heat-trapping emissions by 80% by mid-century, a level that some scientists deem necessary to avoid drastic global climate disruption. This directly, of course, from the LA Times. Today's LA Times, that on a Friday article, went on to say that scores of industry executives and environmental activists testified on the hotly debated fuel regulation at a day-long public hearing in Sacramento before the vote. Corn ethanol producers complained that the rule unfairly exaggerated the effects of using food crops for energy. Cattlemen argued that diverting corn to ethanol has upped their feed cost. Canada's Council General in San Francisco charged that the rule discriminates against oil from Alberta tar sands. And former General Wesley Clark, testifying for the ethanol industry, said the board failed to account for carbon-intensive effects of the U.S. military forces protecting oil reserves in the Middle East. The regulation calculates the life cycles of fuels from their extraction or cultivation, in the case of biofuels, to their combustion. But the indirect effect of replacing cropland used for energy will also be included, and the board's calculations of those land use effects is strongly disputed by corn ethanol producers. So our first question is, what's the impact on the corn futures this week from that ruling, and how do you see it playing out in the future?
Well, I think it's definitely a concern that the industry is going to have to wrestle with as we go forward here. I'm not too sure it's a big concern in the near term. It's mostly, I think, a worry as we look down the road as far as expanding the biofuel segment of the energy sector. Anytime you come up with regulations that one kind of maybe has some suspect as far as the research and the validity of their research on combustion engines, it is a great concern. And then, of course, are we going to have 50 different type of policies throughout the United States? I think that's another concern.
Of course, Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Greg Johnson is with us as well. He's with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Greg?
I think I liked it better when we only had to worry about trying to predict the weather. We've certainly introduced another variable into the equation. On the one hand, the Obama administration seems to be supportive of ethanol, talking about possibly increasing the demand or the mandate to 15%. On the other hand, we've got discussions about a possible waiver for California. And if California gets a waiver, 13 states in the northeastern part of the United States may follow suit. So we definitely have some uncertainty, and the market usually doesn't like uncertainty.
And Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
I would agree with Doug. I think these potential policy changes could be negative just because of uncertainty seems to be typically negative. So I'm not too excited about things going down the road. On the short term, I think there's going to be a lot of wait and see how many other states come in and make some changes or ask for waivers.
Well, then we'll wait and see on that, and we'll discuss it, I'm sure, in future commodity weeks. But let's leave it and discuss the marketplace as it happened this week. When we talked to you on Thursday, Dan, it seemed to me that you were feeling like things might be at a turning point close, that you were getting friendlier to the market. Did the Friday settlements change your mind?
They set back the corn market, the fact that the corn market was ahead for the week and then we ended up lower for the week, I think, is a concern from a technical perspective. But when you take into account there was a lot of issues in Friday's market with options expiration, a weekend, weather worries, you had some noise in the outside market. So you really don't know, and we are in one of these periods where weather is more important probably than anything, and it'll depend upon what kind of rain activity we do get across the Corn Belt here over the next 48 or 72 hours, and we're planning is on Monday afternoon.
Ellen, do you have any producers that you've been talking to, whether they're around Morton and the Peoria area, that have managed to get in the field at all or in other places?
Really, in the central part of Illinois, there's nobody that's doing anything at all in the Peoria area. You have to get pretty far west along the Mississippi before you find growers that are in the field. I know I did speak with a fellow this morning that thought he might be able to get some work done in a Menard County farm and also in one in Logan County.
And then, Greg, when we talked to you then about the cash grain movement, when you've got guys that are setting, waiting for their planters to roll, do they think more often about marketing their old crop, corn or soybeans, or not? And have you seen any impact of that?
I think if they get the corn in the ground, they have a tendency to sell some more old crop corn. They tend to hold on to that old crop corn as kind of an insurance policy until they get that new crop planted. Once it gets in the ground and off to a start, they seem to be more willing to sell that corn. We have not seen that uptick in corn movement yet because the corn has been planted. And I thought we might see a little bit more movement in beans, but we haven't seen that either, even with the higher prices.
Ellen, would you view this marketplace as typical seasonal market at this point?
I think so. I'm really concerned about the amount of corn and beans both on farm. And I know as you go west out of Champaign, there seems to be more of that. I think one of the reasons farmers have been a little slow moving stuff is that they don't have solid footing to get a truck in to load stuff out. So the on-farm amount of grain is still rather high. And that, to me, is a real concern.
And do you have calculations for what's left in your mind, and how much of a concern does it come to be as time passes? What kind of pressure will it put on the marketplace?
I think that there's fully 50% of the old crop corn around. I don't believe that there's anywhere near that amount of beans. And that gives me reason to worry about basis as we go into summer.
Well, let's get a range then on corn of what people think might be around. Greg, you probably should have a pretty good idea at this point what could be around in Champaign County and into the eastern part of Indiana. And then maybe we can have Dan take up his thoughts, too.
I'd say probably around 30%, 35% on corn and definitely less than that on beans, maybe 20% of the beans left to market.
Dan, how about you?
Well, there's definitely a lot of corn sitting in elevators. I guess I'm kind of in that 35% category yet to kind of move. Some areas are going to be a little heavier than others. A lot of it probably depends upon their location and what kind of basis bids they had here recently. But beans have been sold down. I don't think farmers have a whole lot of those beans. That $10 cash moved a lot of beans.
50% we know would be more than usual. Is 35% a much larger number than would be in the bins at this time usually?
Well, it is compared to the past couple years. Farmers took advantage of the $4 plus cash corn prices that were offered early in the year, the last couple years, so they didn't own a lot of inventory when we got here in this late April, early May. This year, the prices have never really been attractive, that the farmers kind of wanted this $4 cash bid, and he really hasn't been offered that in no wide-scale area across the belt.
Ellen, you started us down this path. Do you have a way to deal with it?
We've been kind of drip-and-drabbing corn into the market anytime the basis perked up a little bit. I did notice that Gulf stocks of corn really diminished this past week, and I think that's a function of real decent export demand. If that export demand would work its way a little further north, we on the Illinois River would probably benefit. We'd be moving more corn.
Tell me about basis at this time for corn, please.
We're starting to see basis get a little bit better. We've been down in the futures market for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and so farmers continue to be tight holders, and we've worked off some of these inventories, and I think we've seen some of the ethanol plants improve basis levels, and unless we get a futures rally, I think basis might continue to improve for a little bit.
Greg, and I don't know whether we can say normal growing conditions, but at this point still we're fairly early in the season, despite the fact that we don't have much corn in the ground. But let's say under normal growing conditions, could you go back and give us a kind of a big picture idea, and maybe Ellen could do this followed by Dan as well, big picture idea of both corn and soybeans through the summer months as we come into the end of August, September for harvest?
I guess I'm not sure what you're asking is.
I want you to predict. Give me an idea how you think futures would unfold.
Futures.
So if we've got that much corn in the marketplace, do we see that June, July, August big drop in the marketplace? Historically, when that's happened, then we bounce back up and we have an early harvest season rally, at least historically would have been not the last 2 years, but the couple of years before that. So lay out what you see that scenario looking like.
Yeah, December futures closed around the 406, 407 level. We could probably get back up into the 435, maybe 450 with some slight weather concerns. But really, Those are probably going to be selling opportunities, assuming we have some kind of a normal crop. Remember last year with the $7 plus corn, we still ended up around $3 corn in the fall. So once we get past pollination, if the market feels like there's enough corn to get by, we tend to see a little bit of a sell-off and then worry about it next year again.
On the corn side of things, I think we're going to run into some real problems, even on the very short term. The next time target that I have for even a minor rally could come around the final acreage report the end of June. Again, I think that December corn in that 430 to 435 is going to be a brick wall. I look for an August low.
I think it's going to depend on how this planting season plays out. I mean, this is the start of the growing season, and at least up to this point is not conducive to that USDA number on March 31st growing. Now, things can change in a hurry, and I know Iowa's got a lot of crop planted this past week, but I guess I'm kind of in the opinion that this market may have a little more up in it than what we would normally expect, but I do agree that we do have a problem with old crop inventory levels moving into the pipeline. The last couple years we've kind of had July highs. This might be the year that we end up with a July low, and then we rally into the fall.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. For the second week in a row, temperatures started out very much below normal and then warmed to above normal levels by the end of the week. Cool, cloudy, and dreary weather was the rule early this week as a large low-pressure system crawled northeastward through the eastern Midwest. That kept Illinois in counterclockwise cyclonic flow, resulting in extensive cloudiness, much below normal temperatures, and occasional showers. Once that low departed late Tuesday and early Wednesday, the April sun helped temperatures climb back to near and above normal levels, beginning a stretch of several warm days in a row. Most of Illinois received above normal rainfall this week, mostly early in the week. However, a few scattered showers crept into western Illinois on Thursday as the remnants of a thunderstorm complex pressed east from Missouri. Unfortunately, Mother Nature will not exactly be kind to Illinois farmers and gardeners in the coming week. After a warm weekend, showers and thunderstorms will return to Illinois early next week as a front stalls out across the state and a series of low-pressure waves moves along the front. Whatever gains in the drying of the soil we have made late this week could be undone in a big way next week. Precipitation early next week will likely exceed 1 inch over all of Illinois and up to 2.5 inches in parts of western and central Illinois, generating some more delays in spring planting. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 24th day of April, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio are Greg Johnson of the Andersons here in Champaign County, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgReview from Morton, Illinois. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated is our guest today and a regular analyst with us each and every Thursday on our daily closing market report. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
I'd like you to talk about the weather patterns and how often they've been coming through, how odd it is to have that happen, if that's the case, in the springtime and when you think things might break up and dry weather could come to the Midwest.
Well, we certainly are seeing a pattern that I don't think we've seen repeated since about 1973. In that particular year, we had one storm right after the other marching across the country just like we do today, and we'll see this pattern continuing for a while. It occurs whenever we get the Pacific decadal oscillation to be in the negative phase, and at the same time when we have a La Nina that's waning. This is pretty classic stuff, but it doesn't happen very often. And with the atmosphere being in the mode that it is right now, we are stuck in a rut for a while. the jet stream will gradually start to lift northward, as it usually does in the month of May. But we have such a strong flow of storm systems and moisture coming into the U.S., the storm track coming in from Southern California, at the same time colder air coming in from Canada. The two continue to meet in the middle of the country, and we keep generating these storms one after the other. The thing that will happen in the month of May is we'll probably start lifting this jet stream to the north so that the storm track removes itself from the lower parts of the Midwest and starts becoming more of a festering problem in the northern part of the country. Now, we've already had a lot of problems in the northern plains for various reasons this spring, and the same thing is true for areas in maybe a small part of Michigan, but areas in between have done fairly well. We've been talking today about the fact that Iowa's done some favorable amount of field work this week. They have been in the middle of two wet areas, but it's about over. And if they haven't been successful in getting some of that crop in the ground, it looks like it'll be a tough go as we go deeper into the month of May. As I said, the jet stream will take its sweet time in lifting to the north, so we are going to continue to see wet conditions across many areas in the U.S. But already next week, we'll probably notice that the delta and areas just south of the Ohio River will see a little less frequent, a little less significant rain for a little while, and they will start to see a little bit of firming occurring. It's not going to be just drying up, and we're not going to see aggressive fieldwork like we'd like to see, but it will be a better environment. In the meantime, over this next 10 days, we will see greater amounts of rain fall in Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, the very same area that's been dry in recent weeks, and it will also continue to produce a fairly high frequency of precipitation in Illinois, Indiana, and on into parts of Ohio. The pattern is not likely to go to just flip-flop right away. It's unlike those patterns we've seen in years past where we've suddenly gotten to a certain point in the spring and it just switches off. I don't see any significant high-pressure ridge developing for a while either, except maybe on the Atlantic coast.
Drew, we've got a lot of farmers sitting on their tractor waiting for that green flag to go down this weekend. Some may try it tomorrow or Sunday. What kind of coverages and amounts are you looking for on this system that's coming through this weekend and early next week?
All right. Well, I think that we're already starting the precipitation in the northwestern Corn Belt right now, and we'll continue to see showers and thunderstorms increasing throughout the weekend in the western part of the region. We'll look for 80% coverage in the western Corn Belt. The only areas that probably won't see a lot of precipitation will be the state of Missouri in the west. In the eastern belt, it's not going to be nearly as wet, not initially. I think we're going to see pretty fine conditions coming up out of the delta through the southern third of Illinois into probably the southern two-thirds of Indiana and most of Ohio. Those areas probably will not get much, if any, precipitation until we get into late Sunday and more likely on Monday. The precipitation that occurs through the weekend, per se, will likely run from 3/10 to 1 inch in the northwestern Corn Belt, with a local amount around 1 3/4 inches. That will include Iowa and Wisconsin and southeastern Minnesota as being the wettest areas. The rest of the western belt will see less than 1/2 inch of moisture. And in the eastern belt, we'll probably see most of that shower activity this weekend occurring from northern Illinois into parts of Michigan, and we'll see coverage of around 30% overall. At rain totals, not much more than about 0.65 of an inch. We'll see the second wave of storminess coming across Sunday into Monday in the western belt. There's not going to be anybody spared with that little wave. We'll see 100% coverage. And moisture totals will run 0.5 inch to 1 1/4 inches in the northwestern Corn Belt, while 0.75 inches to maybe as much as 3 inches will occur from Kansas and Missouri into Wisconsin. And for the eastern belt, the rains will finally get going on Monday and Tuesday. We'll see 90% coverage, 0.3 to 1 inch, some local 1 to 2 inch amounts. We'll take a little bit of a break after that, but don't get too excited about it because it looks like we're going to end up with a front going stationary in the Ohio River Valley during midweek next week that could produce some additional heavy rain before the next wave shows up.
Hey, Drew, farmers do not want to hear a cold and wet forecast. You've given us a wet forecast. How about temperatures? Are we going to see cool temperatures return as well?
I'm never going to be invited back here again. it does look a little bit on the cool side. We've got a lot of cold air actually coming down from Canada. The low temperature this morning at Cutbank, Montana, was 5 degrees above zero. That is just about 2 days after it was in the 80s in eastern Montana. That's a long ways removed from the Midwest, but that kind of cool air will sag its way down into the northwestern Corn Belt, and we'll start the battle between the warm air in the southern parts of the U.S. and the coolness in the north. That's the whole reason why we're generating a lot of rainfall. But it doesn't look like we're just going to turn nippy and stay that way, but it's not going to be 70 and 80-degree temperatures like we've got out there here recently. We're going to see those temperatures cool back to the 50s and 60s in the northern part of the belt, especially the northwestern Corn Belt. That'll occur over the weekend and into early next week. The Ohio River Valley will probably stay a little bit warmer with some 60s and 70s occurring there. So we'll hold those soil temperatures up in the southeast, but they're definitely going to come down in the northwest.
So you're looking for cold temperatures to linger into what time frame?
Well, I think over this next 10 days we'll stay fairly cool. As we go a little bit deeper into May, we'll get a bit of a warm-up to take place. But what I'm looking at the moment is still an abundance of cold air in northern Canada, and it will cycle itself through periodically. So we'll warm up for a brief period of time, maybe a 10-day period in there about mid-month, and we'll probably see the planters going pretty good at that point if we can get the rain to take a little break like we've seen this week. And then we'll bring more cold air down, and we'll start the process all over again and have some more wet weather later in the month of May. And this process will probably continue into at least the first part of June. But I think June eventually will turn quite a bit warmer. It's probably going to be our warmest month that we've seen relative to normal. And we'll probably see the wet conditions only confined to the northwestern part of the Corn Belt during that period of time. But that's a long ways out, and I know we need to get a lot of work done before we get to that point in time, and we're going to have to just really work hard at getting those temperatures up just a little bit so we can dry up the ground enough to do some work between each of these storm systems. It's going to be a tough go, but the worst of the rain, I think, for the near term is going to be over this next week, and then we'll start gradually improving things during the week of May 3rd.
Warmer temperatures, you know, all these things we're talking about, lack of rain, but how about wind?
Yes, the wind will probably continue to occur rather moderately at times with these storm systems that are passing through. What we really need is those winds to be drying when we don't have the precipitation around, obviously. The odds of getting strong wind without the precipitation is going to be fairly low for a while. We could get some drying winds to occur, though, on the backside of the last storm system in this series, which will probably be in the weekend from now, and going into the week of May 3rd, in the early part of that week, we may get a couple of days of breezy conditions and low humidity, and an opportunity to dry down the soil just a little bit better than we are prior to that point in time.
Drew, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks again.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You can hear him on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday at 2:32 p.m. Central Station Time on many of these radio stations. Now, a final word from our panelists in studio, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
I think, you know, stay patient. There should be some marketing opportunities, especially with Drew's weather forecast that we heard here. When you combine that with the dollar weakness that we saw here late in the week.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
We didn't talk too much about soybeans, but Argentina's crop continues to decline. China's crop is rumored to be lower than expected, and the Argentine strike is still going on. So bean demand looks good, and bean rally probably is not over with yet.
And Ellen Dearden.
That bean rally could give us another big spike up, and I've been really watching these bean spreads. We've taken that July-November bean spread out to $1.20 this past week. That's pretty amazing.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to our guest in studio, Ellen Dearden of AgReview, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons, as well as our guest by phone, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good week.